sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a program about sex and happiness. And Sex and Happiness is brought to you by Zestra, a product for women to increase their feelings of sensation. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later in the show. My question for everyone out there is, have you ever considered or contemplated looking for a guru? Have you ever looked for a guru and found one? I'm sure that many of my listeners have done that from time to time. And you know, really, when you break down the word guru, G-U-R-U, that's exactly what it means, G-U-R-U. Instead of, I have to find something out there, I have to find out more about myself or fix myself or become better or transformed or somehow I'm not complete as I am. Maybe when finding the guru, you actually find out that, gee, you really are you. Well, my guest today has a lot to say about this subject. He's written a book called G-U-R-U. His name is Krishna Prem, and he found a way to point out that the essential truth that you are fine just the way you are, he's written his book about. And he's a person who used to be named Michael Mogul. He'll tell us about that as I talk to him. He arrived in India years ago and found his teacher and friend Osho. And he became very close with Osho while on his search. And over the years that he's known Osho, and since he's known Osho, he actually has found out for himself that, gee, he really is him. And he is here to mirror to all of us that, gee, we really are us. So, Krishna Prem, it is my pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Laurie. It's great to be here with you.
It's been a while since we talked. You were on my last show, Tantra Cafe, and you didn't have your book yet. And now you have your book, G-U-R-U. It's funny when people actually discover that they are who they are.
Yeah. It's fun because in my time in law school, the famous statement was, if a man who has himself for a lawyer has a fool for a client. And that's the same as in the East, a man who has himself for a guru has a fool for a disciple.
Mm.
So it takes time to know who you are. And some of us find out by only being ourselves and not listening to anyone else. And some, like myself, went all the way to India to listen to somebody else, to look up, to create a master, and then have to destroy the master and destroy the self just to come back home to who I am.
Yeah.
It's so cute. So I love both. I love the guy that said, I'm not going to listen to anybody. And I love the person that says, I'm going to listen to everybody. In the end, you come to who you are, but life is a learning curve. It's amazing.
It seems like when we're younger, we think we know everything. I mean, teenagers are fearless and they're not afraid of anything. They think they know who they are and they think they know everything about everything, only to come to find out, maybe in the first relationship they get into, that they don't know anything about anything.
It's certainly a great moment to find out that you don't know anything and how much you've been pretending to know. And the good news is if it doesn't crush you, it'll make you stronger. So yeah. Everybody in the world is out there for me to look at them just to find out who I am. So when
it's
that
great.
Girl says goodbye, You know, it's the best present I've ever received, because I had to look at everything I thought was working got destroyed when she said goodbye. The only person I don't want to be with is me. And then the journey begins again. You know,
that's great.
You brought me right back into my teenage years, you know, when Rhonda Cobb said, goodbye, I'm going out with an older boy from college, you know. Sorry about that. Hi, Rhonda, if you're listening out there, I love you still, you know.
I love you for that.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's start really with a little bit about a background, because, you know, you and I have background on each other. We know each other. We met in the very spot where you met your master, and I unfortunately never met him, and there are many people probably listening who wish they had met Osho, and some people listening who, of course, have and did and continue to meet Osho somewhere along their path, whether it's in one of the almost 700 books that are written and transcribed from his discourses. But you actually were fortunate enough to go there. You were following your own inner guidance, because you were somebody who really couldn't be controlled by public opinion. Said
right.
You should be or could be or ought to be. You were not exactly a person who followed the normal rule, even though you just mentioned you were in law school.
Yeah.
You did a few things to try what people thought you should do, but then you took off.
You know, I'm constantly reminded, Lori, when I have a younger sister, Risa, and she said to me, what is your book about? And I said, well, it's just an intimate guide to my own enlightenment. And I know now, for example, if I die with five friends, I had a good life. And she said, where did you learn that? And I said, I learned it from a Sufi in India. And she said, I was at dinner when your mother told you the same thing. And I think the beauty of that story is some people like my sister got that information at home in Medford, Massachusetts. And I got that information in Mumbai, India. In other words, I had to leave home in order to find out there's no home to leave, that I'm always at home. And my sister stayed at home and she found out for herself. So in that sense, there's no East and West. There is no movement, except you have to do what you have to do. And for me, it was going to India to find out that I could be in Amsterdam, I can be in Sedona, Arizona. I can be anywhere now because I'm my best friend.
Right, you're not trying to escape yourself anymore.
No.
In something.
So glad I made every mistake I've ever made. And in India, we often say, and I think you'll love it, Lori, that an intelligent man only makes the same mistake once. And the French say, if Lori gets married two times, she's going to get married three times. That once you repeat a mistake more than once, it becomes a habit.
Ah.
So as a meditator, I still make a new mistake every day. And I try to learn from it so that I don't repeat myself. And therefore, I become spontaneous and brand new.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, in terms of my teachings and my life, it's not just what I teach. I live the teaching of my life, which is to pray for the unknown, to welcome the unknown. I don't want to wake up the same person tomorrow that I am today.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
You know, I don't want to know myself. I want to unknow myself. And then know myself in the unknown, kind of like that. It's like it's kind of a koan.
Wow, you know, it's fun to be with you, because as a woman, you said that so much more graceful than I could say it. But one thing that Osho said to me, he said, you know, Krishna Prem, it's so easy to be weak and vulnerable. And it's so easy as you as a man to be strong and invulnerable. And what you're going to learn as you sit with me is how to be strong and vulnerable. You know, how to make life an intimate experience. So I never come from knowing, but I also don't want to be crushed by life. I want to embrace it. And as a man, I can honestly say it's still a meditation for me to be strong and vulnerable. Many women know this trick. So sometimes it's great when we talk, because you have the female perspective and I have the male perspective.
True, but you know, I have a lot of male perspective in me. You know,
I did that out. That's fun.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where I too didn't listen to the powers that be or to public opinion. I chose to do things my own way, and doing that, I had to fight a lot in my life to become who I am. And so I invoked the masculine in myself, of course, until I discovered Tantra.
Yeah.
And then when I discovered Tantra, it unleashed the feminine in myself and everything came into balance.
Beautiful.
And part of it was through, even though I never knew Osho, part of it was through reading Osho and part of it was through doing practices, meditative practices, but more chaotic meditation.
Wonderful.
The kind of things, the moving meditations and the making sound meditations and the whirling and all the things that enabled me to make peace with the emotional inferno that was going on inside me.
Exactly. And Osho really empowered women from the first breath that he took as an enlightened man to his last breath. He loved and respected women, for sure. And through that grace, people like yourself were able to say, wow, I am so glad to be a woman. There's so much to know. There's so much to share. It's amazing. And I also, conversely to you, I was brought up by four sisters. My mother died when I was 1 year old. And I had four older sisters, two of them were teenagers. And so I have always spent my life growing up with women.
Mm.
And that's both good and bad. It's sometimes I look like a man. I can tell you that. But I act like a woman. And I've learned a lot from that contradiction. And so much of life is to be comfortable in your own skin. You know? And everything my sisters taught me, I had to also unlearn, not to become a man, but to become free.
Mm, yes,
so,
of course.
You know, we've all had, I don't know, freedom is a higher value than love. I mean, Osho reminded me that all the time, that I've learned so much from love, but oftentimes love and attachment have so much in common. And so Osho would say, love is only love when it comes from freedom.
We have to say really who Osho is a little bit more, because again, we're talking from somebody who's had an experience either firsthand or close.
Yeah.
Of Osho. So say a little something about who he is, who he's been, and how people knew about him.
Wow, that's pretty interesting and big question. But basically, Osho, he was a Tantra teacher from India. Many of us know him because he came to America, and at that time his name was Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. And he rocked the boat. He was the biggest story in the world in the years that he was in America.
Controversial, the most controversial human being, I'd have
to
say.
Exactly. And basically in Oregon, he was the story of the decade. In America, he came actually only to say one word, meditation. And we built a city based on meditation that lasted for 5 years. And then his work was over and he left and went back to India. And at that point, I went back to India with him.
There were thousands and thousands of people from all over the world who followed him and dressed a certain way. They dressed in orange. Everybody dressed in orange. And so people could tell who each other was, because if they dressed in orange and then the color changed.
Exactly.
Like maroon. But still, people from all over the world identified and knew each other, and also took special names, like your name used to be Michael.
Right.
And now it's Krishna Prem, so you were initiated into a new name.
You know, it's fun, Laurie, because I mentioned that I left home when I was 28 after I graduated college, and I went and I was managing hotels in London, and sometimes the hotels I was managing had four bars and only six bedrooms, and those bedrooms were for the people that were getting drunk. You know,
right.
And at 2 a.m. when I closed the bar, I had friends that were waiters at an Indian restaurant, and I would go over there to eat. And sometimes I would be drunk and I would have this wonderful Indian food. And I really loved that female quality of the Indian man. And one night I got so drunk, I just went Heathrow Airport and got on a plane and went to India. And I only had money for a one-way ticket, Laurie. And you were talking about the courage of a young man, you know.
Right.
And I got off that plane, and I just got off the plane, and I couldn't believe India at all. I was really blown away, and I met a girl.
I got to stop you there.
Okay.
Because we've got to take a break for a second, and I want to see what happens here. I want to trace the story to what happens to you getting on a plane in the middle of the night and going to India.
Exactly.
So can you hold that thought?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. So I want to ask the women out there if they could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response. Or possibly you know a woman who's spoken to you about this and who isn't having the same kind of sexual satisfaction that she's used to. Or perhaps you're not having that same kind of arousal, feelings of desire. So I want to tell you a little bit about Zestra. Zestra is a safe and patented blend of botanical oils and extracts created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets, and each packet keeps the essential arousal oils fresh. Zestra starts to work within about 3 to 5 minutes, and there are some initial sensations, which are called the Zestra Rush. And the effects of Zestra tend to peak at around 10 minutes, and they last for up to 45 minutes. And it can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience, which is the great news. So I feel, and hopefully you do too, that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. And Zestra is a breakthrough that is a safe, hormone-free, and topically applied solution for women who want to put some more zing and zest back into their sex lives. So for more information about Zestra, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. 8047, and please say you heard about it from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show. We're going to break here. We'll be right back. You're listening to Sex and Happiness.
Gee, you are you. You're perfect just the way you are. Krishna Prem has found the way to point out this essential truth that you are fine just the way you are by using himself as the example. Krishna Prem left America over 30 years ago in search of himself, and arriving in India, he met his teacher and friend Osho, who simply said, "Krishna Prem, if you really want to know who you are, be a joke unto yourself. Do not take yourself so seriously." So now you can laugh with Krishna Prem, and at the same time you may just find out how funny you are. Your ego is certainly a serious business. And laughter is the best medicine to move from mind to meditation. In his new book, G-U-R-U, You Can Laugh as a Meditation, as Krishna Prem laughs about himself and mirrors to you how funny your ego can be. For your copy of G-U-R-U, go to butterflyworkshops.com store, and you'll find an easy way to get your copy from me at butterflyworkshops.com. For weeks now, you've been hearing me talk about the Eroticos Film Festival and my film Beyond Dinner winning the award for the best short film. And you've been hearing me talk to all these guests that I met while I was there. And you haven't heard that much about the dinner, although in the show I did with Dr. Ava and Nancy Sutton Pierce, we did talk about what was in my film. I want to let you know that the film is about a ritual dinner that I invented called the Gate dinner. Gate means beyond in Sanskrit. And it's a very sensual 8-course dinner that starts with the forbidden, starts with dessert and leads its way back around to other foods. But all the foods in the dinner are very, very sensual, very beautifully prepared, and the presentation is amazing. And in this dinner, aside from everybody projecting themselves through a meditation that I do to their highest self, having had boundary exercises prior, the men rotate around the table and they feed various goddesses, all the goddesses that are around the table. And even if you come there with a partner, the partner lets go, doesn't take things so personally, lets the partner rotate around and have a sensual experience with each person that's participating. In this case, it would be men having a sensual experience with different women and then working their way back to their original partner. If this piques your curiosity and interest, I want to let you know that these dinners are now available to you wherever you are in the United States. And what you need is 20 people who would like to participate, and you can get in touch with me at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com if you'd like to host a dinner like this in your part of the world. I would love to come to your and offer one of these dinners to you and your friends. And I know my chef would love to come too. Also, Antonio Tiggs, who you've heard on the show as well, would love to come and paint your servers. So your servers are all gold or all silver or what have you. So we have a little entourage that would like to come and make this such a memorable event for you. Please get in touch with me if you'd like to hear more about it and talk about the details. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness, and today I'm talking with Krishna Prem, who was just about to tell us about, he was telling us how he got to India the first time. He was working in England, and he was working in a bar, and he got loaded one night and got on one-way ticket to Mumbai, which some of you don't know is Bombay. So, okay, so you got to India, and you met a girl. You met the girl in India or on the plane?
No, actually, I was on the plane with a girl. at that age, you always want to be with a woman, 28, 29. And when I got to the airport, I had a choice to buy a round-trip ticket and go to India alone, or get 2 one-way tickets and go with my beloved. So we went together to India, and our relationship began to fall apart right away, because one thing you shouldn't do in India is drink the water. I didn't know that then. I always say nothing turns a relationship into a relationship like a glass of Indian water. So our relationship began to break down, and here we are now finally in a restaurant going to eat some solid food when a second girl sat down. And the reason I bring that up is she was like a movie star, and she was all over me. And I said to her, while my girlfriend was in the bathroom, I said, "You need to be clear with me, because I'm not used to getting so much attention from a beautiful woman. Please tell me what you want, you know, because if you want me, you can probably have me." And then my girlfriend came back, and she was a little bit jealous, but also she was curious too, because I'm alive, but I'm not a rock star, you know?
Right.
So she said, "No, I want to introduce you to my teacher. His name is Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh," who later became Osho. And we were both enraptured how much energy she was putting out in the name of love, and that's all she wanted from us, to tell us about Osho. And we both looked at each other and we said, "Great idea. We're in India. Let's go and see a guru." I never saw that woman again, Laurie, but it comes up for me once every year or so to try and reach out to her to thank her, because it changed my life. I never saw her to thank her, because I didn't know what I was thanking her about.
Yes.
You know,
So it's amazing, because this is a really critical turning point in your life that you didn't expect. I mean, some people went to India looking for a guru. Some people are in, you know, whatever country they're in, and they're looking for the next guru to come down the pike.
Right.
You know, there are so many who've come from India, and then there's, you know, some people call me a guru. So there's people who are all over the place looking for someone, a teacher.
Yeah.
And you know that old saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Beautiful.
And so you got on a plane, unbeknownst to yourself, looking to meet someone, and you didn't know that. And there you are sitting in a restaurant with your girlfriend, not getting along too well, and this luscious woman gives you the signpost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really appreciate it, because she was so alive and beautiful, of course, it caught my attention. But I was so pleased that she wanted to introduce me to a man. So those are the contradictions that happen in India. And so I went to see Osho, and I do want to say to the audience that the reason I was becoming an alcoholic in London was because I was having so much difficulty with the American dream being destroyed. You know, I had grown up loving America, and I still do now. But during that period, I had so many questions about our foreign policy and the like that I had difficulty accepting supporting America. That's one of the reasons I left. And I felt terrible about it, and I had... And so when I was sitting in front of Osho, the first thing he said to me, and this could stop anyone forever, he said, "The revolution is inside of yourself." And my whole world exploded from pain to bliss, because then I realized my difficulty wasn't with the U.S. government. My difficulty is with me. And he said, "We can work on this." And I absolutely got it. I said, wow, if I'm going to destroy someone, it's going to be my ego. If I'm going to know someone, it's going to know the naked Krishna Prem. And I was so excited that I jumped on the journey. Now, I didn't think of it myself, but as soon as he said it, it became who I am. So I'm forever grateful to meet someone that can share with me the naked truth. And by the way, it's probably your best friend that you no longer listen to because you've heard her talk to you so much. But it's for me, life is about intimacy now. You know, what I know about Tantra, really, Laura, you could put in your little finger, you know, because we've laughed at each other. But I can tell you about intimacy. I have found out that you and I are one, you know.
Yes.
And for me, that's Tantra. And when I walk down the street, I love, and people are my favorite trees. I love nature, but I love people. And I've had big meditation resorts in America in Osho's name. And I help run the resort in Pune, India still today, because I'm so thrilled when someone discovers the passion for who they are. I'm still that way. It's amazing.
That's what's so great. I mean, that's what keeps things fresh. And there is, like, there's always more discovery to intimacy. There's always more layers of the onion to peel. There's always a deeper cut at who you are, who I am. And the only way we find that out, I mean, look, there are monks who say that they've gone to the Himalayas and they've gone into a cave somewhere. They come out 12 or 18 years later and they supposedly know something about something. My feeling is that my cave is isolation or with people. And when I'm with people, that's when I flourish. That's when I grow. And that's when I peel the onion skin back. I'm delighted. And sometimes it's painful, though.
You know, one great story, Larry, and I'm sure you know, there were two monks, an old monk and a young monk, and they were crossing a river. And there was a woman who was afraid of the water. And the old monk wouldn't help her because he didn't want to look at women. And the young monk picked the girl up and put her on his shoulders and walked across the river. And when they got to the other side, the old monk said, "What about that girl?" And the young man said, "There is no girl. It's over. That's in the past. Because you didn't help her, you remember. Because you desire her, you remember. I just helped a human being across the river. It's over for me."
Right.
So I love that, because being in the moment, if you're with somebody in the moment, you can now be alone. But many people, when they meditate, are only thinking about the opposite sex. You know, and so go out and have some fun, then sit down and meditate. And that's why Osho is totally famous for his active meditations.
Right, but also he became the sex guru because he said that people could have as much sex as they want.
Absolutely, but the outcome of having as much sex as they want to a master is aloneness, you know. The outcome of gossip is silence. So making love, when a master says make love, he's not saying make love and tomorrow make love to somebody else. He's saying make love so totally that now you are ready to sit and be alone. And when I talk about aloneness, that doesn't mean there's not another person in the room. but it means you're no longer leaking, you're no longer desiring, you're just grateful and thankful, and you sit and meditate. Of course, when the energy comes back, you play again. But really, the outcome really of Osho being open to sex was really to teach aloneness. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. Well, he said, get so totally into whatever it is. I remember hearing him say on a recording that he said, go so totally into your fear that you come out the other side joyous. Go so totally into your anger that you come out the other side with compassion. And go so totally into sex that you come out the other side into samadhi, or into a state of enlightenment. And that would take away all suppression.
Right.
Which is what people learn to suppress themselves.
And see, Lori, just take a moment to compliment yourself. You read what he wrote, but you explained it as Lori. And it's the same truth. In other words, the truth doesn't belong to the master. It also belongs to Lori and Krishna Prem. Once we hear the truth, we are a master.
Mm.
Once it rocks your boat and you're thrilled to be alive, and every relationship is so that you win and your lover wins. And you don't control and your lover doesn't control. But these things, of course, take experience. I don't want people to not learn from their mistakes. So sometimes it takes a lot of guts to know when to make love and when not to, when to be in relationship and when not to.
Right.
And I think one of the things that Osho helped me with is that he would say, life is a verb. It's not relationship. That's a noun. It's relating.
Mm-hmm.
It's not love. It's loving. Life is a verb, you know, and the journey is the goal.
People meet, they start building something with each other. That is a noun, and it becomes the thing that they put their energy towards, and there's no life in that thing.
Yeah.
The only life there is in that thing is the act of loving, relating to each other, and when they feel that they know each other, like they know something, that's kind of like death. There's no life in it. And it needs to be torn down.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, for example, when we talk about Osho, a lot of friends might say, I want to go and see him. Well, he left his body about 20 years ago. But he left me. What I mean by that is he left me alive. And I'm in some ways, I want to say, it's kind of a funny thing to say, but when he died, I actually became free.
Yeah.
Because I was no longer looking up. I know that many people in our listening audience saying, I don't want to look up. Well, I made the mistake of looking up, but I learned from that mistake. Mm-hmm. I no longer want to look up. I want to look at. I want to talk with. You know, I want to make love too, you know?
Yeah, and so it's great.
So I feel blessed, but it really did free me when he left his body.
Yeah.
And yet I'm still in service, not of a personality called Osho, but in essence, it's called life. In life. I might call it Osho on your radio show, but when I go make a cup of tea at the end of the show, I'm not going to say, you know, Osho tea. You know, I'm just trying to indicate to the audience that I fell in love and now I'm free.
Yes.
And if you are free, you're in the same space I'm in. There's no one to get enlightened. When someone says, I am enlightened, I just start laughing. Because that's a contradiction in terms, I enlightened. So what enlightenment means is returning to innocence. You still exist, but it's not an ego that exists. You don't have to pump yourself up to have a cup of tea. You just do it because you're thirsty. It's such a blessing.
This is a good place to stop for a moment. When we come back, I'm going to ask you more about this, because this whole notion of being enlightened and how it affects sex and happiness, and also how sex and happiness, again, over and over again, return one to finding that who they are, to becoming free. So we're going to talk more about that when we come back. You're listening to Sex and Happiness I'm Laurie Handlers, and today I'm interviewing Krishna Prem, who has written a new book called G-U-R-U. And if you read in between those lines, G-U-R-U spells guru. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Laurie Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Laurie Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
This is Sex and Happiness, a program about sex and happiness. And I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and I'm talking to my dear friend, Krishna Prem. You know, we didn't talk about what your name means in the last segment, but for some Westerners, it would be good to tell them what Krishna Prem means. And,
oh, that's so cute.
Yeah.
I think your listeners probably have the same feeling I have. When I was so excited when Osho said the revolution is inside of myself that I thought I was going to explode with happiness. And then he said, and your new name will be Krishna Prem. And I nearly died because this is 35 years ago, and I thought he was going to send me to airports to chant and collect money and sell books. And I was mortified. I hated the name Krishna. So here I am ecstatic and also caving in at the very same time. So when you say my name, Krishna, I really like it. But when I often don't call myself Krishna because it doesn't sound as good when I say it as when you say it. But the one thing he said to me is your name means, Krishna means ecstasy and Prem means love. And he said, life is a celebration. And of course, as we remember in the last segment, I was so much in pain from saying no to America and no to my family and no to my upbringing that I was pretty miserable. In other words, I hadn't learned the art of being alone. I was alone, but I was miserable. Well, that's not aloneness, that's loneliness. Whenever you're not happy with yourself, you're lonely. And I think, you know, as a tantra teacher, you understand, I often, when I meet lonely people, I say, please don't ask somebody out on a date until you feel good about yourself. Because if you ask somebody out on a date from this lonely space, they can't do anything for you.
Right, and you feel so needy, there's no thirst that they can quench.
Right, exactly. And that's why I say to people, get happy and then meet somebody. You usually meet another happy person. You won't be so needy for each other. But one of the things that I find very interesting is that we're born enlightened. You know, we're children of the universe. I love being around children. And any of your listening audience that has a child right now, you have your own guru. Just get down on the ground and start crawling around and see a coffee cup, and you can't imagine how beautiful that coffee cup is. And then you spill the coffee on the ground, and then you take the coffee grinds and you smash them into your rug and see how beautiful that picture is. You know, how many children love to watch their own poo? Wow.
Yeah.
How creative is that, Mom? I just sent that right out of my body. And just get on the ground and enjoy. And what happens is around 3, 4, 5, 6, you start to act like your parents, you know? And so you lose your enlightenment. So that's what I mean. Sometimes you're born enlightened, and then it seems that everybody loses it. Then it's a question of rediscovering innocence. And where Osho is amazing, and where Krishna Prem can share with you and your audience, is this enlightenment we were talking about. That's being a child. Everything is brand new. But we're adding awareness to the equation. So when I say a child is enlightened, they're going to be just like you in a couple of years, even if you say to your child every day you're enlightened, because everybody loses it.
Yeah, and they lose it through all the processes of socialization and growing
up.
They have to be a certain way. They have to be encultured into their culture. They have to have the belief system. They have to have the things that are necessary to allow them to sit in a chair in school or sit in a chair in church or a synagogue or whatever. And they have to also be polite and make their parents feel and look good and all this stuff. And then we have to, like, strip away all that stuff in order to be really happy.
Exactly. In order to get that wow factor back, you know.
Yes.
You know, I haven't done drugs forever, but that word, that wow that came out, you know. I think it's a great concept to regain your innocence with awareness. And when awareness becomes a thought form, then you know you're no longer aware. You've taken your wow factor and put it back in a box. So the thing that I share the most with people is what Osho told me one time. This is a funny story, Laurie. I was leaving India and Osho said, please come and sit with me. He's giving a public talk. Well, I didn't know how many Indians liked Osho. I knew there was only about 25 Westerners around him, but when he gave a public talk, 25,000 Indian friends showed up. So there we are outdoors at sunset. And of course I was, you know, socially late. So I wasn't sitting with him. I was in the middle of 25,000 Indians. Not only that, Osho was speaking in Hindi. He would speak 1 month in English and 1 month in Hindi. So I didn't speak Hindi. There were mosquitoes as big as stars all over my body. And I'm saying, how can I get out of here? Well, it's hard to get out of a place with 25,000 Indians, I can tell you that. And all of a sudden, in the middle of this 1.5 hour discourse in Hindi, Osho said, do not build your house on the bridge. And it was like, again, like it was just a wake-up call for me to keep moving, to never sit in one emotion and build a house called sadness, to never sit in one house and just be jealous. What he taught me was, if you're going to sit in a room, keep all the doors and windows open, so that jealousy blows through, but also at one point, freedom will blow through, you know? Mm-hmm. So I try and live my life like an open being. What is coming and what is going? And the Sufis say, and you've heard it all the time, nothing is here forever. Everything passes.
Exactly.
So sadness still visits me, but I no longer build a house and say, I live in sadness. I just breathe into it.
Right.
And see what comes up. And oftentimes breathing helps to take sadness and make it so big you can walk out the house. You can leave the house.
Two things that occur to me when you're saying this. One is sometimes I say to someone, how are you? And they'll say, I'm so sad or I'm so angry. And it's like they're saying, I am this. And that's not really the truth. I feel this is the truth. I have a feeling, I have an emotion called sadness. In this moment, I have an emotion called anger. In this moment, I have an emotion called joy. In this moment, see, I think joy can be eternal. I actually do think that joy can be eternal, but I think it comes from the places you're discussing. When you're open and things flow through, then there becomes a kind of rhythm with life that I call joy.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
The other thing is that I say to people in my classes, and I know you also know this, but I'm saying this again for people because often people are just, they indulge in a feeling and they love the drama they get from it and the mileage they get from telling it over and over again and from making themselves miserable. It seems to be kind of a misery that they indulge in. And the way I look at it is feelings are like the weather. You know, there's a tsunami yesterday, and then the next day the sun comes out. So it's like if I attach myself to the tsunami, and then it's gone, who am I?
Beautifully said, beautifully said. You know, Osho was told me one time to remember some of the happy moments and write a song and sing them while I take a walk, because he said the problem with happiness and with ecstasy and celebration is that they don't take up any time.
They're in the moment.
Yeah,
moment,
and moment. Mystery takes up all day long, you know?
Yeah.
And also people can't identify with happiness because it's such a unique experience to you.
Right.
So, but they can identify with misery. So you have really almost 6 billion people that will only talk to you if you want to talk to them miserably. You
yes.
know, if you want to commiserate.
Yeah.
If you try it, go up to see a friend tomorrow and say, I feel so good. They'll say, my God, how do I get away from you? You know? But the good thing about you, Laura, is you want to share. And happiness is contagious. And Tantra is a teaching. And so you're sharing all the time. And more of us have to have the courage to say, wow, I'm having a good day. You know, I'm in love right now. I'm so happy to be with you. Now, I say these things, and right now, Laurie, and I think our audience needs to be involved in a meditation called Atisha, because Atisha said, what I want you to do is I understand this pain and suffering, so I want you to breathe in all the pain and suffering of your friend, and then it comes into your heart, and then you breathe out love, because the heart is the alchemical spirit in your being. So when you breathe in someone's pain, if you take it into your heart and then you breathe out love, that's a wonderful way to be with someone that's feeling pain and doesn't know it's not permanent. Because everybody thinks pain is permanent. Bad moods are permanent. So just breathe with them. Breathe it into your heart and then just breathe out all the love and compassion you can possibly do. For me, again, because we're a little different, for me that would be Tantra.
Yeah, that's fine. For me, that would be Tantra.
Because
I think we should do it.
Have the ultimate orgasm because it's. I'm just. I love making love and everything, but it's no longer more valuable than to breathe with a friend now. So, but I'm a little older now.
And for me too.
That's nice. I mean, I'm embarrassed because Osho was a Tantra teacher, and you learned more from Osho about Tantra than I did. For me, it's. You know, just breathing now, you know, being with my friends and always reminding them to come from who they are instead of their conditioning, because all this sadness and misery is really built into your conditioning. It has nothing to do with who you are.
Exactly. You
know? And
exactly.
When you talk about bliss, it's a beautiful thing because Osho would often say to me, oh, you're blissful today, but don't forget that that's actually an experience. And that bliss is actually emanating from your silent love that we have for each other. But bliss is so much fun. I like bliss too, but I'm just saying, I always come back to who I am, and then I breathe out. And when I'm breathing out, that's the bliss that I'm sharing with the person I'm with. I never say, guess what? I'm breathing bliss all over you, you know. But
exactly.
All of a sudden, the person says, my God, I feel like I just had a cup of coffee and I didn't.
Well, listen, I want to clear up a misconception, actually, and that just is really that Tantra is breathing, movement, and sound.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's really all it is. The essentials of Tantra are breathing, movement, and sound. And sex is the portal. It's using the sexual energy. But there are people who practice Tantra who don't have a lot of sex and don't necessarily even have a partner often. It's really breathing, movement, and sound, and you can do it alone in your aloneness and become very open and everything you and I are talking about,
wow,
very loving.
I love that. Then I'm a tantrican. I just found out. I didn't know, but I agree with everything you just said. I'm so happy now. I'm glad I called for it. You called me. I can't remember which. But this is, no, I totally get it. And that's why to share something as simple. See, it's you, Laurie. You can say that. When I got it. That's another, like what I was saying about Osho. I just got it from you. I feel great. I'm a tantrican. I love it.
You are. You absolutely are. You sleep, eat, and breathe Tantra.
Amazing.
Because it emanates from you, breathing, movement, and sound, and a loving being, a loving spirit.
Thank you.
And that comes from the work that you did. You're taking yourself seriously and then lightly. And then you take everyone else seriously and lightly. Like, you have the ability to just be with.
Yeah.
And that's truly it. We're going to stop here for a second. Okay, because hopefully other people are listening right now and they just got it. You know, bam,
Yeah.
Just like that. Yeah. So we're going to stop for a moment. When we come back, we will be talking some more about this whole notion of being happy and how that involves your sexual energy or not. What really will increase your happiness and your feelings of sexy and your feelings of power and your feelings of belonging and your ability to be alone and be with all of it? My guest today is Krishna Prem, and we're having a great time actually getting it on the show. So we'll be right back.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Lori talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Lori's CD, Shamanic Release and Ladihan, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Lori is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Lori sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Ladihan today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Ladihan CD by Lori Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
I'm speaking today with Bonnie Gale, who is the co-creator of Sex Butter, a wonderful new female enhancement product that can be used by females and males. So tell me a little bit about Sex Butter. How did you get the name Sex Butter?
The Sex Butter, the product itself, actually looks and feels like butter and melts into your skin just like butter does when you touch it. And it's for sexual enhancement and lubrication. So I wanted something really direct that let people know what it was about.
Well, it sounds absolutely yummy.
It is.
Does it smell yummy? Does it have a taste and a smell to it?
Yes, it smells like dark chocolate mint, which I think is pretty yummy. And the taste of it, it has a kind of like a taste like coconut oil.
Oh, but the smell sounds wonderful. Dark chocolate and mint. How wonderful is that? When people use Sex Butter, what can they expect? Like, what can the woman expect? We'll start with her.
Okay, I apply it internally onto the vaginal walls and the G-spot area as well as the clitoral area. And it really makes internal orgasms easy and effortless. I mean, the sensation is just amazing. And there's a little surprise that comes out for those men who are not used to their women having internal orgasms that can be accomplished with Sex Butter.
I like the idea of a surprise.
So do the men.
If men use it alone, is that okay too?
Oh, yeah, they can definitely use it alone. And the really amazing thing for men, they feel sensation even after they have orgasm. So the recovery time is really shortened big time.
It sounds like everybody should try Sex Butter, don't you think?
I think everybody should try Sex Butter.
How can people get Sex Butter? How can they order it?
We have Sex Butter in 1-ounce jars. It looks like a high-end eye cream, so people don't have to be embarrassed when they order it. It doesn't look sleazy or porn-like. So have little travel packs that people can take along. They can actually, each one can be used like up to 3 times.
How can they find out about it?
www.sexbutter.net.
Sounds terrific. Thank you so much, Bonnie Gale.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Lori Handlers, and today I'm speaking with Krishna Prem, who went all the way to India to take a trip and ended up staying in India for a very long time, being a world traveler, becoming somebody who not only at the time sat with and looked up to Osho, but now embodies the spirit and the teachings of Osho in a way that other people connect with him and get the spirit and feelings of Osho and the feelings of what we just talked about, Tantra, just by being in his presence. And when he and I are together, we just bounce it back and forth with each other.
Yeah, it's great. I'm learning a lot talking to you. This is fun. Who's interviewing who here? You know, Lori, I just had fun. I was in Los Angeles, and I had just had a sport injury teaching tennis. I was teaching tennis to 2 police officers who are professional runners, but they never played tennis before, and their girlfriends did. So they came to me and asked if I would help them. So I'm teaching them tennis, and all of a sudden, they both got better. So then, instead of teaching, I was running and running and running, and I went right through my body. So I had to be helped on the stage when I'm giving a talk in L.A. to a yoga conference, which was hilarious, you know, because they were all sitting in a full lotus, all holding hands with girlfriends, and they were all old enough to be my children.
And
to be a yoga teacher in L.A., you have to be really the best. You have to actually be an actor or an actress. You have to be everything. I was very impressed. I looked out. It was just the most beautiful people I ever saw. So I said, you know, I left L.A. 35 years ago because there was no love here. And now I look out, and you kids are 35, and you're so full of love. I'm really, really surprised. I said, does anybody not know who their father is? Because it's possible that one of you and were related, you know, because I left town pretty quick. And, of course, nobody raised their hand, but they giggled. And I said, oh, but you're all so good-looking. Is there anybody that would share their partner with me? Is there anybody I could sleep with tonight? You know, you're all so good-looking. Of course, they all giggled, but nobody raised their hand. And I said, as a yogi in L.A. and as a person who's a lover in L.A., you need to ask yourself, are you in prison?
Because that's so good.
And I said, for me, you guys are so full of love, but you know nothing about freedom. And I said, the problem right now in America is over 20 million people did a yoga class in the last week. But it's more or less to make their bodies more beautiful instead of their being more beautiful. Now, you can mark my words, within 5 years, people will move from yoga to meditation. So in the West, we do everything backwards. We do yoga to be more beautiful. Where in the East, you're so beautiful, you do yoga. In America is such an outgoing country that we need people like Laurie that will remind everybody it's not out there. It's inside of who you are. And the reason you do yoga is so that when you sit, you can relax. Yoga is basically an aberration. It's like taking your body and convoluting it. But when then you just sit down in a chair or sit in a full lotus, you can relax and watch your breathing. So you'll see in the years to come that the music at the end of the yoga class will become more valuable to you than the yoga class itself.
Mm.
So I really feel to come back to the West because I was impressed with this audience, by the way. I loved every single person I saw. And something is going on in America now.
Yes.
Nobody's talking about it, but America is turning out to be the place that I wanted to live in and had to leave. Now, I have left and I have come back, and I am so impressed with the young people, how willing they are to be in the moment again, how they have learned from their parents' mistakes, so to speak. I don't know what the new world is going to be like because there's some difficulties right now. But I can tell you that people are popping all over the West. Everywhere I go, people are popping into meditation, into joy. They don't even know what it is yet. Because
no, they don't.
Teachers yet in the West. You know, we need this radio show. I know there's one person listening that says, thank you, I didn't know how beautiful I am. This is not a show about Krishna Prem. This is all for the listening audience to agree with me, disagree with me, love me, hate me, as long as you do it from who you are. If
exactly.
You love me because I'm great, because you love yourself, you know,
yes.
Treat me like an equal and I'll treat you like an equal. I already do that. And even if you hate me and want to kill me, I think you're great.
Yeah.
And I if you kill me, you'll probably learn more than I will dead. But let's not do that. But basically, it's about you. It's about the listening audience saying, my God, I do feel more alive than I did 30 minutes ago because two people are saying, I don't need my ego to be your friend. I need you to be naked, and I'll be naked with all our clothes on. And that's what Tantra is again to me. I love you and you love me, but it's not about our personality saying, God, don't we get along great, you know.
Or building that thing that then has to be torn down because it's misery in there. Okay, I have this house with you, and then I have these 2.5 children, and I have this, car, and I have this dog, and I live behind a white picket fence or whatever it is. I mean, that's just a strategy to sell people things. That's like a church strategy or a Madison Avenue strategy so that people can be controlled by whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a freedom and an intimacy that one can only have when one has the freedom to be who they truly are, which is your book, G-U-R-U.
And anybody from your listening audience can just get in touch with you. And if you send that email to me, I'll get back in touch with them. It's not about selling books. It's about you reading yourself. You know, I want people to read their own lives. And I've used myself as an example, and of course, in many parts of my book, I'm just an idiot in search of my divinity. But I never tell a joke that doesn't indicate who I am. I never tell a story about myself and Osho unless it's real for you. So the purpose of my book is, as you read me and laugh at me, you'll find out that you're also funny, and you begin to laugh at yourself. And that's what in the East we call the cosmic joke. That Laurie laughs at Krishna so much that she ends up laughing at herself.
Exactly.
And so I use myself as an example. It's not a great book, but it's real. Real books aren't necessarily great.
You know what? It illustrates a lot. It really talks a lot about anyone can identify with it. Anyone who's actually looking to be real can identify with it. If somebody's not looking to be real, if they're just buying the party platform, whatever that happens to be, then they're not going to be that interested. But anybody who wants to be real with themselves will find that in your book. And people know this, but you know, you can write to me at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. You can always send me an email to that. I love to get fan mail, and I'd love to get fan mail about wanting to know about Krishna Prem's new book, G-U-R-U.
Yeah.
So, my dear, we have to end here.
No.
Yeah.
Let me go. I'm going to be alone now. I love you, Laurie, and I love the courage. You know, when you interview somebody else, you're just acknowledging yourself, and I think you're a great lady for sure.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate that in you, and I look forward to our next meeting, whenever that shall be.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome. I want to acknowledge my listeners. Thank you so much for listening to Sex and Happiness loyally. It is wonderful. You are growing. The body of you out there is growing and growing, and that is exciting for me. Please visit me on Facebook, Twitter, and also YouTube. I have a new channel on YouTube with lots of very educational videos for you that where you can learn some of the things that I talk about on the show. And I want to thank Zestra, my commercial sponsor. Thank you all. Bye-bye from Sex and Happiness.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-